South Africa and India are perhaps the two countries that have been most forceful in trying to get the WTO, the World Trade Organization, to agree to a waiver of intellectual property rights on COVID-19 vaccines in order to boost production and increase access for poor nations. They've got a couple of big players on their side. Well, India's a big player. The US agrees. China agrees. But unfortunately, at talks being held in Geneva, there was yesterday again a failure to reach a consensus. It will be back on the agenda at the next WTO meeting, but with no guarantee that it is going to have a different result. Fatima Hassan is director of the Health Justice Initiative and a human rights lawyer. Fatima, very good afternoon. Nobody's giving up on this, are they?
No, and in fact, thanks for having me on the show. Our president said a few weeks ago when President Macron visited South Africa that we will not retreat. And I think there's so much support from civil society and faith organizations and former Nobel laureates and, you know, heads of state that all support the waiver proposal, including 100 countries, that it's really not the right time to be backing down. And John, you know, I think the irony of what happened yesterday is that they've broken for summer. They're taking a break for the European summer while people are getting sick and dying. So the conversation and the negotiations have been deferred to the end of August or early September.
What arguments can be made that are going to be more successful than the unsuccessful arguments that have already been made? Or is it simply a case of repetition, just keep banging that drum until there's agreement?
So I think there has to be obviously a reckoning, which is what we've said in the past few months about how the WTO actually works and the system that has been designed that effectively means that a handful of countries, particularly the UK, Germany and some other EU member states, can actually block a proposal of this nature when 100 countries support it and 63 countries are co-sponsoring it, right? And that also you can take so long and had so much of time pass in the middle of a pandemic. So clearly the system is not working, and I think there's larger systemic issues about why we're negotiating a solution to a pandemic at a trade body, and in this case the World Trade Organization, and not at the level of the WHO. We don't know what more these countries want. They've asked the same questions repeatedly. These questions have been answered over and over and over again. I mean, you know, the numbers speak for themselves, the death speaks for themselves, the variants that are circulating, the number of infections, the dismal number of vaccines that have been administered in low-income countries tell the world the story of why this waiver is so critical and important. So, you know, we can only believe that there has been extensive lobbying by the pharmaceutical industry on these governments to block the waiver, and that at the heart of it is two things. One, a desire not to share technology and knowledge in a pandemic to extract as much profit, and really just sort of, you know, a lack of interest in the lives of people that are mainly black and brown in poorer parts of the world.
Is there a point at which practically this ceases to be of significant relevance? Probably not. Because, I mean, Africa has very little vaccine manufacturing capability. I don't know about other parts of Southeast Asia, parts of South America. So if there were to be a dramatic turnaround when they come back from their summer holidays, how quickly would that waiver of intellectual property rights start to have a meaningful difference on the ground? Because, I mean, the figures in terms of the percentage of the Western world, the first world, for want of better phrases, to be vaccinated versus the third world percentage to be vaccinated are stark, dramatic, scary.
So, great question. I think it can happen within months, particularly with the mRNA platform of vaccines that fall into that particular category. We've definitely seen capacity come online in Europe within months once permission was granted when they had their own supply crisis. I think one of the things we have to highlight is that there is untapped manufacturing capacity in Africa, Latin America, and Asia, and that were you to actually share the technology, be really committed to transferring that knowledge, not just for political reasons, but for true public health, immunological equity reasons, then you could actually scale up the amount of supplies that actually come into the system within months. Obviously, it's not an overnight solution, and that's why South Africa and India had been proposing it from October last year already in anticipation of what was going to happen. So would we have been in a different situation had the waiver been approved in January or February? We think so. Would we be in a different situation next year if the waiver is approved now? We think so. And I think you're right to say that we certainly still need the waiver because we need it in 2022, we need it in 2023. All indications are is that this pandemic is going to be with us for a long time, and it's not just going to be a once-off global vaccination program. So the more manufacturers we can get into the system, the better. And, you know, the proof of that of what we're arguing around multiple manufacturers is our own program was affected when one manufacturer couldn't basically give us the supplies we needed in relation to Johnson & Johnson because there was a contamination issue in one plant. And that is why you always try and have a sustainable supply chain and a sustainable number of manufacturers that can actually give you vaccines so that if there's a riot, if there's a contamination, if there's a fire at one or other of these plants, it doesn't affect a country or continent's entire vaccination program.
Fatima, if you're correct, and I suspect you might well be correct, that this is the result of successful lobbying by the pharmaceutical industry that doesn't want to make less profit, or it would argue be less able to recoup its investment into developing the vaccines. Is there a sense perhaps from them that this then becomes the thin edge of a wedge, that the minute you start surrendering intellectual property rights on something like a vaccine, then all of a sudden the clamor rises for them to surrender sooner or immediately intellectual property rights on other drugs which deal with things like cancer, so that if a sort of, or for want, a miracle cure is too strong a word, but if a particular cancer medication is developed by one of the pharmaceutical companies which has much better efficacy than anything that's in the market at the moment, there'll be the same clamor, waive your intellectual property rights, and they are nervous of that.
So I think you've hit the nail on the head, and we previously argued that there's an existential crisis among the pharmaceutical industry about what the potential of the waiver means, which is why the waiver is important, not just for COVID, but I think, you know, for implications for how we treat chronic conditions beyond COVID as well. And certainly the issue of the commodification of medicines and the fact that it's subject to trade rules and it's subject to this really complicated process that the WTO set up, which is contained in the TRIPS agreement, is basically coming to the fore in this pandemic. All of the fault lines of the restrictions and the monopolies that IP or intellectual property is allowed to create is actually coming to the fore. And, you know, the important thing to note is that the waiver actually doesn't only talk about vaccines. I think, you know, you're right to point out that the companies are worried about the diagnostic, therapeutic, anything related to the management and treatment of COVID. The proviso to that, obviously, is that the waiver proposal is basically proposing it for just 3 years. So it's not a permanent waiver. It's not a permanent relaxation. You don't actually expropriate the rights of companies that are regarded the patent holders or the holders of IP of a particular vaccine or therapeutic or diagnostic. So the concessions are there to the industry to make sure that it's as narrow as possible, that it's not indefinite, and they would still earn royalties on the sale of any of those vaccines or diagnostics. So the issue goes back to why are the CEOs of these companies, who were, by the way, publicly funded, the research was publicly funded on an accelerated basis. The risk has also been socialized. We are underwriting all of the indemnification, all of the vaccine injury compensation elements. So, you know, the question again is, why is there so much opposition and why is there so much resources being directed and delaying something that could very well save lives in the middle of a pandemic?
Fatima Hassan, thanks for talking to us this afternoon, Director of the Health Justice Initiative.